right. So we now have Mr. Leahy.
That's right, sir.
Welcome.
Stormwater.
Thank you. I don't know if you have any diagrams you'd like to refer to in the course of things.
I'm quite happy with that one from the bundle.
And that is
Three A? Yes. And knowing the way I'm operate, I'm just as likely to grab the pointer and rather wobbly pointed bits on it.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so I can see what I've got written here. So, I'll talk, hopefully reasonably briefly, about how we've addressed the potential stormwater impacts for the designation stage. Here today I prepared the report, the stormwater and flooding report, and some evidence. I'm not going to read the whole evidence, but I do have a some summary notes, yeah, which I thought I'd talk to first. And then there were three questions that Mr. Skelton kindly handed off to me, and I thought I'd address those briefly, but I'm certainly happy for any interruptions on the way through.
That sounds perfect.
Okay. So just from a stormwater perspective, putting the hub in the freight hub in location. The freight hub itself, I think the designation's around 177 hectares, and it forms a part of the larger Mangaoni stream catchment, which is around 15,000 hectares. And if I just point to the figure on the screen at the moment, just to give you an idea, the Mangaoni stream is the stream which comes down on the southern side of the site through here and then heads down to the southwestern portions of Palmerston North. There are also two reasonably large catchments that drain through the site from the north, the what I've called the northern catchment, which comes down. The principal inlet is up just south of Bunnythorpe here, but there are a number of smaller crossings across the railway line and railway road that they all drain through the site, coming out at this location here. Then there's and that's around just over 600 hectares that drains through at that location. In around the centre of the site, we have another just under 600 hectares that drains through, enters the site at this location, and exits the site at this location. And then each of those, this northern one joins the Mangaoni pretty quickly, and this one has some local streams that join the Mangaoni down across the other side of Roberts Line. There is also quite a small catchment that drains onto the site at the south here. It's around about 20 hectares, drains through the site and then across Roberts Line at around about the Richardson line intersection. So in terms of how the stormwater comes in and around the site, there are a few smaller watercourses on the site as well, ephemeral watercourses or depressions. So the stormwater and flooding assessment was carried out at a reasonably high level. Its target was not to achieve resource consent. Its target was to identify what land would likely be needed or reasonably be needed within the designation to meet what we anticipate to be the resource consent requirements. And as part of that, early in the phase, there we go, I've done it now, had a discussion with both regional and district city council officers to agree, look, what level of detail do we need to go to here? And that the outcome of that was included in the back of the assessment report. Based on that, the level of analysis that we've carried out, we've come up with the management system, stormwater management system on the site. It includes a lot of on-site stuff which fits within what I call the operational areas of the hub. But what we needed were detention areas and treatment areas at the downstream end of the site that we just couldn't fit within the site. I wasn't confident we could fit within the site. So that's these two areas that you see jutting out across the new bypass road.
Yeah, sort of two polyps.
Sorry, polyps?
Yeah, attached yeah. to the
yep, I like that.
Designation.
My technical term for them was sticky outy bits.
Yeah.
But
okay.
However you like it. Right. And then
Spurs,
perhaps, yeah. And then they have outlets. This northern one, we've got an outlet direct to the Mangaone stream here. There was no point in doing a blob and then not being able to connect it to our receiving system. And this one here has a connection coming down onto this drain, which is the existing discharge. All the existing discharges from that central portion of the site would come down through there as well. And then we've got a smaller on-site detention and treatment centre in this location, just dealing with these local areas coming out and joining the existing system around the Roberts Line, Richardson Line intersection.
In terms of that hydraulic connection to the existing streams as part of the graduated discharge following events, did you actually select very closely the points of entry, or are they just more generic in a sense, or did you actually study?
They are not the points of entry, and I can illustrate at the moment, most of the site in the central portion would be coming in either through this branch here, or it drains into that central stream through the site.
Yeah.
And we've pulled the connection point down, just downstream of that, because this, even though there's a blue line shown there, I don't know of any actual water course there that would enable us to connect to. But that stream would be receiving all those flows that naturally come from the site. And one thing I didn't want to do was say, well, let's direct it over here to another watercourse that didn't naturally receive those runoffs.
Right.
But it's not coming in at the same location necessarily.
Right.
It's downstream, if anything,
yes,
of that location.
Okay, that makes sense. Just as a matter of interest, I'm a little bit struggling to remember some parts of your evidence, but what I'm interested in is your levels of detention that were expected. Because I'm aware that the Mangaone runs through Palmerston North and has been a problem waterway in terms of hazards for a very long time. Anyone who's been involved in Palmerston North over the last 30 years knows the Mangaone stream is a sort of slightly tricky waterway that skirts the edge of the northern side of the city, or the western side of the city.
Yep.
So I'd be interested to sort of know those sorts of statistics, be reminded of them.
I have to remind myself of the absolute value of the numbers.
Well, not the numbers, but how the design.
But I'm pretty sure that they're in my evidence, and I've highlighted them. So, but definitely, look, the Mangaone stream is a problem stream. We're not going to solve that.
No.
It is still going to be a problem stream.
Yeah.
What I'm very much anticipating, though, is that through the resource consent process, we will be required to demonstrate that we have not made it worse.
Yeah, that's my point, is that you don't expect it to go that far. But I would have, you know, some people, that sensitivity is much more acute with this water body than a lot of others where they have some headroom in terms of that. So it's quite a demanding, it's going to be quite a demanding process.
Yes, I'm at the moment there's models, hydrologic models set up of the catchment by Plumston North City, and I think the regional council either has one or is setting one up as well. I'm anticipating that that would be the base model used for this analysis. The freight hub site would need the land use changed. Then, so start with the base model, what's happening there now, what are the flood flows, what are the flood levels, then change the land use and the land form on the freight hub site, what's the flows, what's the levels, then put in the mitigation and say, right, have we now got it back to that earlier case, or preferably a little below, but at best it would be a tiny little bit below, because we're 177 hectares of a 15,000 hectare catchment.
Oh, sure.
So betterment I don't think is possible, but not making it worse, absolutely I'm anticipating that to be the requirement.
And so when you sized the detention areas,
yes,
did you, because you weren't doing detailed design, did you operate quite conservatively?
Quite conservatively. I operated conservatively. There's a technique we use. Normally for detention areas, what we do is we run a computer model, we route hydrographs through and put a certain amount into storage to reduce our peak discharge. There's an approximate technique that we used, and this is the technique I agreed with the reviewers before the start of this process, was to look at what's the difference in volume we anticipate being generated from the freight hub site. Let's call that our storage volume. Normally, that volume is more than you would need by doing a hydrograph routing technique.
Right.
We also, in that, we assumed the whole of the freight hub site is impermeable. And as you can see from the drawings, from the landscape drawing, that's not the ultimate plan. So there's a bit more conservatism built in there. You know, it's not all concrete and asphalt.
What was your climate change
factor? Climate change allowance was 3.1 degrees.
Right.
So we used RCP, is it 8.6 or 8.1? I can never remember the numbers there, but the most extreme RCP range and the mid-value, the mid-range with each of those RCPs have a range of temperature increases to the end of the century.
Yeah.
So we used the most extreme RCP and the mid-range value.
Right.
I've gotten into arguments with developers about that in the past, but for me, if you're making a land use change, it's not like if you're sizing infrastructure and you get it wrong, you can just make it bigger. Once you're making a land use change, you want to be a bit more on that conservative side.
Yep, that makes sense. Thank you. What we suggested is that you write your questions and give them to Kath, and we'll consider whether they should be put. Sorry, I interrupted you, but I just thought it was a convenient to just test that.
No, I'm happy for any of those sorts of questions. That's all for the moment.
Yep, thank you.
Okay. So in terms of the overall stormwater management system for the site, there will be on-site systems, either at source treatment, low impact design systems, things to treat and manage as close to source as possible. If I give an example, this is a car park area. I'd anticipate that in that car park we would have treatment systems, swales or rain garden treatment systems, as a first cut system before the water gets into the stormwater system and then goes to the ultimate detention and treatment pond. The building materials, I'm anticipating neutral building materials will need to be used, not just bare zinc materials, zinc's a sacrificial coating that we put on iron to avoid it rusting, but it is sacrificial, it leaches off, gets into our stormwater systems and our receiving environments. If we can use neutral materials like, say, colour steel, painted zinc effectively, we're not having that zinc coming off, so let's not generate it to start with. So at source type measures. Then high contaminant generating areas, the log yard, there was a refueling facility up here from memory. They will have specific bunding, maintenance methods and treatment systems associated with them. But there's enough land around those within the operational areas to handle those at source prior to their discharges getting into the stormwater system, then going to the downstream treatment wetland detention pond area. So we've got at source systems, we've got detention ponds to reduce peak flow rates and impacts on the Mangaone stream. We've got the treatment wetlands within those ponds to help remove contaminants. Then, of course, we've got some culverts. If I start on the northern end, there'll need to be culverts that pick up these crossings that come across Railway Road and the main trunk at the moment. I'm anticipating one will come through here and then diagonally into the stream there, and another one coming across, picking up this main outlet through here. The open channel, then culverts under the operational areas that cannot be moved, and then under the road here ultimately as well. And these other smaller sticky outy bits here, it's my technical term, are there so we can construct the outlets to the culverts, the energy dissipation to help reduce the risk of erosion to the streams and give us some construction space for those. Coming to, of course, the central culvert, I think that's around 650 metres of culvert, and perhaps I'll come to the questions on that at the end. That's a good length of culvert. As part of my assessment, I looked at, can we actually take the water around the site? Can we put detention in upstream of the site? These were all things that were suggested by various people, but they're just too hard. Where do you, if you'd say, let's divert this water, and hydraulically you probably can divert this water and take it back this way, but then where do you put it? You're putting it 600 hectares into a catchment that doesn't naturally have that 600 hectares going into it. So I rejected all those sorts of options.
You're sort of working against nature.
Well, working against what has evolved there, yes. I'm not quite convinced what has evolved there is all natural. That's another matter again. But, one of my philosophies through here was keep the water going largely where it goes now. Okay, so in terms of potential adverse effects, potential effects that I've looked at, increasing upstream flooding is a possible effect, but that doesn't need any extra land on the designation because that's about the conveyance that we allow through here.
Yeah.
So that's within the designation, so that didn't need more land. Increasing downstream flooding, that's where these detention systems come in to reduce those flows. It's going to be interesting how they, the analysis, because I hear your comment, there's certainly a lot of And from my walking around talking, we spent 2 days talking with people locally. There is a real awareness and knowledge, more than awareness, of the flooding through here and downstream. We're very low in the catchment here. There's a risk that detention can actually make matters worse. And this is why the modelling is going to be so important. Because you're looking confused as I say that. So the time it takes water to come down from a long way away is much longer than the time it takes for water to pass through a point from close handy. If we then take that close handy site and slow down that water coming out, which is what we do with detention, we then run the risk of starting to coincide that with the water coming from a long way away. And that's one of the other things with the modelling. It's not just about put in detention so that our post-development flow is no higher than our pre-development flow. It's about putting in the detention that our effect on the floodplain is no greater post-development than pre-development. They're slightly different scenarios and we have to look at them quite carefully.
I'm not sure I quite grasp that. So can you explain that to me again?
Okay. Sorry, maybe if I... Jacob, can we have up the catchment plan? Was that four?
Just looking at that.
Sorry. There we go again. I'm getting as good as the other guys at that. Seven.
That's seven.
7A, yeah. So maybe the easiest way is to look at that, and I'll try and explain it on that. So, of course, our site is here. Do you want to blow that up just a little bit more? Wonderful. So our site is here, and you can imagine for the water to get from the most extreme part of the site down to the Mangaoni stream, which is here, it's going to take 15, 20 minutes. The water coming from up here.
You're talking about somewhere in the Ruahinis.
Yeah. Yep, and that's the water coming down the Mangaoni past the site is coming from there. Sorry?
20 minutes seems short.
No, that's just our site.
Oh, I see.
That's just our site.
Yeah.
Coming down the Mangaoni stream, that water is, I haven't worked out the time of concentration, but maybe it's an hour or so for that peak to come through. Now, detention ponding is about reducing a peak of a hydrograph, and that flattens it out. So that peak goes on for a longer period of time. And that's a consequence of the runoff from our impermeable surfaces. So if we have that peak at a pre-development level, but for a longer period of time, there's a risk that that's now starting to coincide with maybe in this case the rising limb from this peak coming through from upstream. So that's what I say, the complexity with the modelling here is not to say let's reduce the peak flow rate from the site post-development to the peak flow rate pre-development. It's actually about have we reduced the flows from the site so that we don't increase the flooding in the Mangaoni stream, because that's the outcome we're trying to achieve. The easy version is to say let's just reduce our peak flow rate from site to pre-development level, but when you've got such a big difference in the times of concentration, sometimes that gets to be counterproductive. So you've actually got to look at the whole system, and that's why I say this model I'd envisage would build on the city council model for the Mangaoni, or perhaps the regional council model, whoever's most advanced at the time, and then look at our site impacts on that and manage those impacts so that on the receiving end system, we haven't generated an adverse effect. Does that work if I explain it?
That makes sense. And in your discussions that you described, did you have a chat with Max Houghton, who made a submission about flooding in that area? Was he one of the people that you spoke to?
I'm just trying to remember. Do you know where...
I think he's a farmer on the where the
Tikiari
bits are.
sticky outy bits, yes. Are you okay if I go back off that,
that's fine,
scheme? Can we go? And I, he's the one we met and went for the walk down to the Mangoni, I think, isn't he? Yeah. So, yes, I think so. All the green, yes. So, yes, we did meet him.
Yeah.
And I remember, put that back, I was particularly interested to discuss with him because his land that we were on was high and dry. It ends up being what my northern sticky outy bit.
Yeah.
And then we walked down to the Mangaoni from there. And he certainly talked about flooding. He's been there a long time.
Yeah, well, that family's obviously been there for a long time, so they probably have some anecdotal evidence.
Yes. Look, a number of the families and people we spoke to were able to talk from their personal experience about both the frequency and extent of flooding, particularly through this area here.
Right.
Okay, where was I before I sidetracked myself? Talking about... So we've got the flooding perspectives, both upstream and downstream, to consider. The upstream stuff, that's about conduit size. The downstream stuff is that balance with detention. We've got fish passage to consider. All our culverts will need to allow for fish passage. That's while it's been in legislation for a long time, these days it's a non-negotiable. That's just how it is. So we've had discussions, can we get fish passage? Not all of that. You know, we can certainly put the engineering facilities in place, but there's an ecological component there, and I'll let Mr. Garrett Walker talk about that. In terms of sediment loads, with the change in land use from a rural land use to a more urban land use, there's a reduction in sediment loads typically coming off the land, but a change in the chemical composition of the stormwater runoff and the sediment, which is why you get into this treatment train approach to try and manage those effects, managing them at source and prior to discharge is the philosophy we've adopted here. As part of that, one of you've probably all heard of low impact design. The Brits call it sustainable urban drainage systems. There's all sorts of terms for it around the world, but it's about trying to mimic, particularly on those regular flows, not your flood flows, but on your regular flows, that pre-development runoff as closely as you can. And we haven't got it perfect yet by any means. So it's things like allowing for infiltration, allowing for evapotranspiration, allowing for the capture and on-site use or reuse of stormwater, so that in those really regular events of we're not getting that really peaky, instantaneous runoff that we get from our typical impervious and our historical stormwater drainage practices. Nowadays, it's more about stormwater management. We're looking at a more holistic approach to stormwater management, not just that single, how efficiently can I drain the land? We're after multiple outcomes. And through the consenting process. That's where the emphasis is, has been for a number of years now. One of the advantages I see with this development over, say, a series of developments that occupy the same amount of land is the ability to integrate the solution with the land use. Where you've got fractured land ownership, it's really hard, and I'm seeing it more and more in my new role. I've recently changed jobs, but I'm seeing it more and more how hard it is with fractured land ownership